The following podcast is classified Q. It contains questionable knowledge from dubious hosts. Listener discretion is advised.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat. Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 99 of Behind the Panels, the comic book show that takes more breaks than a Kit Kat. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
I'm David Longo.
In this issue, Marvel Civil War begins for realsies in New York as superheroes are forced to register. Then Scarlett Johansson wraps her legs around an electric hog. Also, it's the new saga, John Romita Jr. joining Superman, and more in what we've been reading. Plus, our 99th Kick-Ass Pick of the Week, Scalped, Volume 1 by Jason Aaron and R.M. Guerra. This is Behind the Panels.
If you having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. I got the rap patrol on the gap patrol. Foes that want to make sure my cask is closed. Rap critics to save money, cash holes. I'm from the hood, stupid. What type of facts are those? Have you grew up with hoes?
Yeah, I'm from the hood, stupid. What kind of facts is those? Riddle, who you know better than Ho? Riddle me that.
That's I love the fact that our opening music selections have become so far from comic books.
Because it's 99th issue, 99 problems.
Fair enough.
But this ish ain't one.
You could have gone the Nina song, right?
We could have. 99
Schloss Luftballon.
99 Luftballon, I think you'll find that is. To keep with last week.
What did you call me?
To keep with.
Gesundheit.
To keep with last week's impromptu German theme, which was...
German behind the panels.
German behind the panels. Oh, yeah. Wow. That's
199
look,
we'll
next week, we'll say up front, next week we're taking a week off. Yeah, I know, more breaks than a Kit Kat.
But this one was pre-planned. So.
This one was pre-planned because we're going to Melbourne to do Oz Comic-Con, which we'll get a pretty special interview, we hope, out of that to be confirmed this Tuesday.
But we're not making any promises.
We're not making any promises. We never promised anything on the show, but that'll be our 100th episode. From issue 101 onwards, it'll all be German.
And it'll all be downhill from
here. All German. All German. All the time. Alles Deutsch. Uber alles.
You should yell the news.
My question is, though, how do we put subtitles on a podcast?
That's your problem, listeners. I'm going to dig myself out of it.
Really bad dubbing.
I am Dave McVeigh, and you are listening to a
show. Oh, you know those computer voices. Just to overdub it.
Yeah, you're just gray. 001. Yeah, your host.
You sound like the little midget from Twin Peaks.
Oh, this just got so un-PC so quickly. I'm going to make it a little bit more by hitting up our vintage clip of the week.
Cool.
I suggest we split into teams.
Good idea. That way some of us might make it and stop the meltdown. Want to be on my team, lady?
Sprite, Colossus and Storm take the main stairs. Cyclops, Thunderbird, and Iceman the back way.
Nightcrawler, where did you come from?
Wait, something's different about him. I'll catch you, you blue devil. And when I do...
Thunderbird, wait.
He's gone.
And the door is locked. I think this place is going to get a lot more confining.
Don't panic, Storm.
I call upon the spirit of the Great Grizzly.
I didn't know you could do that.
I can't believe that Kurt led us into a trap. He's a practical joker, but this...
Yes, he has much to explain.
You got some explaining to do.
Now, that was Thunderbird, as you probably heard in there, who was not a marionette. He was, in fact, the Native American character for Marvel for quite some time, which I thought was appropriate for this week's Scalped issue. We probably remember because we did Chris Claremont's classic X-Men run.
They killed him off pretty quick.
They killed him off about three issues in. But in the 1980s Spider-Man, His Amazing Friends, which that was from, they had their one X-Men, the X-Men Adventure it was called. And Thunderbird was one of the characters that they used.
They resurrected him.
Yeah, and for some reason, Iceman makes reference to it. I didn't know you could do that. In the comics, no, he can't draw upon the powers of animals. He basically has the powers of Animal Man in this, but with shape-shifting abilities as well. It's weird, man. But that was the 80s. It was all weird.
The 80s was a weird time, I can tell you that. I was there.
how have we been, boys?
I survived. I've been good.
We actually, it's only been 7 days since we last did this.
Can I just state for the record, for those who have not been following me on Facebook, I'm on holidays.
Holiday row.
You bastard. Hey, great, there's a Griswold pull there. Well, David and I are both going to be heading off on the road on Friday this week. If you download this on the Monday when it comes out, we'll be heading down to Oz Comic Con on Friday.
Assuming I get that by Monday.
Look, if you hear this between now and Melbourne Oz Comic Con, we will be arriving in Melbourne on the Friday and leaving late Monday. Most of the weekend for me will be taken up with the con, but we'll both be around. And we're doing other things and meetups and things as well, so we won't be around. But like, you know, if you know you're going to be there and you want to meet up with us, just hit us up on
definitely
on Facebook.
Saturday morning. I'll be definitely at OzComic.
Yeah, we'll both be at the con on Saturday morning. So if you want to meet both of us together and get that all important photo that we can sign and charge you $60, no, we're not gonna charge. Oh, we should set up like a table out, like a little, like a card table out.
We are assuming that people actually want to meet us. It's a very large assumption.
Our fans turn up in the strangers.
Just make cardboard cutouts of yourself.
I want the Stan Lee coin. I want that $100 for an autograph, $60 for a photo, whatever it was. You know,
I think it was $200 for an autograph. Actually.
Whatever it was, like it was ridiculous money, and you had to line up for 7 hours to get it. And you pretty much got, you know, him just signing and a grumpy man handing you
a signature on a rubber stamp.
and we found a map to the hidden treasure of Oz Comic Con as well. But I don't know if we should talk about that.
No, we can't. Yeah. We swore to the shaman we would never reveal that.
we'll edit that out, guys.
Shazam! I think it's time for, other than the treasure map, what else?
What treasure map?
Exactly. Yeah. What else have we been reading this week?
Where? Looks like we got ourselves a reader. Read between the lines, bitch.
So speaking of treasure, let's start with the obvious one. Saga number 20.
Hells yeah!
Why is this book the greatest thing that ever got put out by two people?
I actually have no idea, but for some reason it is.
Yeah.
It is just, you read it and it's mesmerizing.
I have not been this excited about a book month in, month out since Why the Last Man.
Mm.
You know, we kind of were joking around before the show and saying, this is the greatest book ever. Oh, maybe it's because they do six issues at a time, take a break and make it really good rather than trying to fit a weekly schedule. Like, oh, okay, there you go.
Yeah,
that's it right there.
But we've tried that and it doesn't make the show any better.
No. No, actually, our first show back this year after a long breakout was excellent. That was our Dark Knight Strikes Again show. And then it's just been downhill since then.
Well, that's when we're here.
Yeah, but we've got three voices. I think it's because, you know, and also we're not, you know, Brian K. Vaughan or Fiona Staples.
That's true. And it we're not. And that. Funnily enough, we're actually not a comic book.
some may say that
we, might have something to do with
some
it.
Some may say we belong in the funny pages.
But look, in all seriousness, this book is exceptional. It is a compelling story and the world building has been phenomenal. Mm. And what I love about this book is that no matter what they throw at you, you accept it. Yeah. And they don't have any explanation
the
for
the opening page has... Prince Robot the Fourth being blown by a beaver woman.
Yes.
Like basically that's the opening page of issue 20 and you're like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
That's fair enough. That must be on Sextillion.
Yeah. What happens on Sextillion
stays on Sextillion. But it's great. It's like we've said it before. I won't labor the point because if you're not reading this already, there are three trades out there you need to go back and
go
catch
it.
Up really quickly or on digital.
This is comics. 101.
Absolutely.
Or on digital, whichever way you want to do it. Go to Image and get it directly because they do all this stuff DRM-free and the money's going directly to Image.
And if you want to hear us gush even more about it, go back a few episodes where we actually did cover the first trade and you'll see why.
And buy it in on print and single issues if you can because the letter section is
The letter
awesome.
Section's great and like the covers by themselves look fantastic.
Mm.
And they actually make a comment in this week's one saying we don't normally do alternate covers because Fiona Staples' cover art is usually iconic by itself. Mm-hmm. But they're going to do for the 25th issue. They joked.
If there's enough.
Yeah. They said if there's enough desire for it, they'll put out some variant covers for issue 25.
I could only read Saga every month and I'd be happy.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But there's been a few good ones came out this week. A few from DC, in fact. Let's talk about Superman number 32, which is the first issue written by the new creative team, Geoff Johns and John Romita Jr.
And I'm going to go on record and say, wow, a Superman book I want to read. Yeah.
Look, we all said the same thing almost simultaneously going in. It was just, oh, look, I can jump on and not have any prior knowledge because this is a classic Superman book. Mm. Dave, what did you think of the
book? Yeah, I love the book too. I thought it was amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, it really harkens back to the old Superman from the previous continuity. You know?
Look, and I'm going to say I'm not a huge fan of John Romita Jr. I think he's got a very stylized look. He used to be the Spider-Man artist.
Do you guys remember
choice?
Secret Origins that Geoff Johns wrote with Jeff Loeb?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think, not Jeff Loeb, who did the art for Secret Origins? Do you guys remember?
I forgot.
Damn,
remember,
I can't remember. I apologize.
The recent Secret Origins?
Yeah. Yeah.
I could look it up.
Yeah, but look it up. But the art style reminded me a lot of that. Like, it wasn't the full-blown Romita cartoon kick-ass
It wasn't kick-ass,
style.
Yeah. But it was...
Just to see, like, Clark's rounded glasses.
Yeah. I kind of looked at it, though, and I went, you know what, though? My feelings on it were... Because it is a new story arc, because it is a new art style, because we've gone back to the Daily Planet, we've gone back to Jimmy Olsen, we've gone back to Perry White. Suddenly, it just felt like an old-fashioned Superman story, and you felt like you could just come on and you could just start. And from this point, and Superman had lost me way back.
I think it lost all of us.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
And so I'm actually now I don't know if this is going to last. Let's not forget that going way back to the beginning of the New 52. Aquaman came out, we went, this is going to be the book of choice, and it died shortly.
I suspect, because we said on the news last week, there's about three Superman titles ending in September, so I think a lot of eggs are going to be put into this basket, because I think they want this to be the lead. I mean, look, Geoff Johns is back in top form on this book.
Yep.
This is the Geoff Johns that brought us, you know, 10 years of Green Lantern, that Geoff Johns, you know. So it's really, really good. It's really exciting. As you said, great story to get into if you've, you know, want to find a jumping on point for Superman.
This is it.
Like I did. I wasn't reading any Superman.
No, neither was I.
So, Batman, on the other hand, Batman number 32 came out this week, which is the penultimate.
I was going to say the best thing about this entire issue was the fact that at the very last page it says next month, the conclusion.
One thing that really struck me, because I realized that I hadn't bothered reading 31 yet. So when I read Batman number 32 this week, what struck me instantly was something that you've said before, Dave, just how much text there is on every single page. And I'm not saying, like, you know, I can read. I don't mind reading a lot of great dialogue if it's good dialogue. But so much of it is just unnecessary exposition. And it's like there's none of that show, don't tell kind of attitude in there. I get it. Snyder's a really clever fellow and he's got a lot to say. And at the end of the day, I think it's just that 0 Year is not connecting with me because we know, no matter how this finishes, we know what happens. Like, we know Gotham doesn't get destroyed. We know Batman can't die because we know that there's been three or four great arcs after
this. I'm just waiting to get back to normal continuity. I'm now at that point where it's gone too long.
Because this almost strikes me as this should have been the first story that they would have told at the start of the New 52, but they decided to start with Batman, you know, in the middle of, you know, an adventure, because this would have been a great story. To me, this would have been far more compelling when you're giving a brand new version of Batman. You go, okay, that's how this Batman starts.
And we don't know where it would go.
We don't know where it's going. And then we get Court of Owls after that. And you're like, well, hell yeah. I mean, that would have been... If we were doing a year of Court of Owls now, we'd have no complaints.
Wrong order. It's just it's all just badly placed.
It's like one of the most awkward comic books out at the moment.
It really is.
Because it's like it's supposed to be a New 52 title, right?
Yeah.
So if it's doing year zero, it's doing year zero to... Like, on one side, a history that we know, the old continuity, and a year zero to a continuity we don't know about. So where does it fit in?
Also, I'm sorry,
in Batman's story,
year zero has been going for a very long year at this point. Can we move on?
It's been going longer than the title was going for,
almost.
And, like, what's really annoying to me about it is that, you know, like, you could just change the date and it would just be the same story.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't even have to be a year zero, a prequel.
Why isn't like, this what, just a Riddler what, tale what, yeah. within the current continuity?
Yeah, because there's nothing particular in it except for the odd reference in there to...
Hey, I'm young.
Except for the fact that he's sleeveless and wearing pink rubber gloves. There is nothing in there except for those earlier issues in it that makes this an origin story rather than a... As you say, so I'm...
But, like... The artwork's amazing, isn't it?
The artwork is really good. You know, Capullo at top
still,
of his game.
For all the complaining, it's still really well written. Mm. It's just
long.
Why?
Yeah.
You know, it's beautifully worded.
Yeah.
If you take
this as a when it finally comes out as a hardcover standalone story, it'll probably read really well.
Yeah.
But you know.
And at the moment, I just feel like I'm a little bored. Can we move on?
Yeah.
It just feels like every month we're reading like 5 spin-offs.
Yeah.
Even though we're only reading one issue.
Yeah.
I just think I still think it's overridden. Yeah. I will agree, it's not poorly written. It's not poorly overridden.
I think that's the best word.
And the thing
it.
Is, like, what we're striking at is that whole argument about, you know, what medium is comics.
To quote Amadeus, there are too many notes.
Going over then to the other DC book that came out this week, it was Justice League. I've written down 32 here, but I think it's actually Justice League 31. Because Justice League always seems to be numbered slightly behind everything else.
I will confirm that.
Because it always comes out the latest one, so we get 32 at the start of the next. It's weird. But the latest Justice League issue came out as well. And that was pretty good, because this is Lex Luthor trying to...
31.
Yeah, it is 31. I always find that numbering odd. But anyway, the Justice League, this is Lex Luthor trying to bribe his way into the Justice League.
Or blackmail his way in.
He's basically confronted in the opening. At the end of last issue, he confronted Bruce Wayne with being Batman, which, spoilers, he is. and now he kind of wants in.
This was actually a good Justice League issue. It was a good little, because it's basically just a dialogue piece between Lex and Bruce. Mm. But there's a wonderful little interstitial in the middle, which cuts to the satellite, which has got Cyborg and Shazam, or Captain, Shazam now, isn't he? He's dropped the other moniker. Basically with Shazam being bored, because he is a child.
He's a kid. And he's like, bring me what I think the Justice League needs. And he's thinking it's going to be something, and it's just like a ping pong table.
Yeah. And he goes, it's here.
So I quite like that. Over at Marvel, the House of Ideas, Amazing Spider-Man number 3 and Guardians of the Galaxy 16 are probably the two worth talking about this week. There's also, and I didn't get a chance to read it, there's also a Peter David Savage, I think it's Alan, oh God, I've forgotten who wrote it. There's a Savage Hulk out this week as well, which I haven't read yet.
Keeping up with the Hulk.
Amazing Spider-Man number 3, this is good. I'm really liking this. I like Peter Parker being back. I like the sense of humor.
Bring the humor back.
I like this. We're still dealing with a lot of the sort of fallout of Superior Spider-Man, and it's good because I actually kind of miss Superior Spider-Man, so some of those story elements carrying over is quite good for me. Like elements like
reel that back a little bit. We actually heard Richard say, I miss Superior Spider-Man.
I know. By the time I caught up with it, I loved the character. It was really good. I've said this before on the show. I actually think it was a good arc by the time it was done.
Yeah.
In fact, it was a magnificent arc by the time it was done.
Now, once we had conclusion, it's fine. I think it was getting over the mad factor.
Yeah. But I think that's what comics needs a bit of sometimes, is those kind of shake-ups, not just for the sake of it, but for good storytelling, and that's what it was in the end. Mm. And now that we're seeing the effects of that, we're seeing that there is not just Peter Parker's back, everything's normal. We're actually seeing consequences of that arc. It's not just let's whitewash that last year and a half or last 2 years or whatever it was. No, we actually have. That has given rise to a whole new set of problems for Peter Parker, which is what Peter Parker's all about, problems.
Yeah, problems.
So I quite like that. But speaking of people with problems, Guardians of the Galaxy have some serious problems.
They do.
Guardians of the Galaxy 16 has got some really great action scenes this week. It starts with Peter Quill, next letter in the alphabet. Peter Quill jumping out of a window and being rescued by another Marvel character who I won't spoil. The character who was meant to turn up in the last issue. It was on the cover.
I proudly bagged and boarded that to be true.
It's got a really, really great confrontation scene between Quill and his father, which is just frameable.
It also has, quite frankly, an amazing entrance from Angela. Yeah. And for all of the hype and controversy that it was that Angela was coming over to Guardians and to the Marvel Universe, she's actually become one of my favorites at the moment.
Every time she appears now, I've got this Jarvis Cocker song called Angela playing in my head. She turns up here, oh, Angela. Every time she turns up. We should get that on the soundboard.
Well, we should. But I thought her moment in this was wonderful, especially when Gamora says, I'll be right back. And she goes, no problem. She's just fighting people off.
I thought we'd agreed to share these melees.
Yeah.
so look, that's really exciting this week. Look, next week, there's a few big titles titles coming
out. Can I just mention one more really quickly before you go on to next week?
It's mid-segue.
I know. One more that we missed. And it's not actually a new title, but it's a new release.
Yes.
They just released Harley Quinn.
This is the zero issue director's cut.
I thought I'd just bring this up really quickly. I haven't finished reading it, but it is worth having a look at and collecting it for those who are collecting the Harley Quinns, because it is the zero issue again, but every second page is commentary. So basically, you read one page of the book, and then the next page is Palmiotti and Amanda Connor talking about the art and talking about what the choices they made and so forth. This is actually a really interesting insight into the creation of a book, and worth picking up.
Because that zero issue was really interesting because it had all the different artists.
So this is well worth having a look
at.
And it was
really meta. Yeah.
So if you're, for the collectors out there who are collecting single issues, this is one worth having a look at.
Okay. Definitely check that one out because we love Harley Quinn's one of the books.
Harley Quinn is brilliant.
Every month. I think it's time.
You were going to tell us about next week?
No, I was going to say next week there's a few ones coming out, but we're going to be away, so we probably won't cover them in much detail. But we might go back and if I don't put up a couple of reviews on the site, definitely the big one to look out for next week will be at least for us will be Earth 2 number 25, because it's going to be a double sized issue,
and we will talk about that issue 100.
We'll definitely, and hopefully if all goes to plan, we will be talking about Earth 2 in depth on the 100th
wouldn't
issue.
That be nice?
That would be very nice. That will be confirmed for us on Tuesday. So look for the website to see what we're plugging for a 100th episode spectacular. It could be just the three of us in a bathtub. We don't know at this point. Should we do some news, fellas?
Why not? Dan Abnett will return to the Marvel Cosmic Universe in October with Guardians 3000, reuniting the original Guardians of the Galaxy team with artist Gerardo Sandoval.
IDW will publish the first ever complete collection of Wonder Woman newspaper strips from 1943 to 1944 later this year.
Jim Lee has teased that he will return to Batman for his next DC project following the end of Superman Unchained in September.
DC has implemented a new payment plan for its creators, with royalties now based on a book's net revenue through various distribution channels, including digital, rather than on its cover price.
Hmm. Scoot McNairy has been added to the cast of Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice in an undisclosed role.
17 minutes of Guardians of the Galaxy footage will be played in selected IMAX cinemas in the US, at least, on July 7th, ahead of its August release.
Harley Davidson has revealed that their first electric motorcycle will debut as Black Widow's sweet new ride in the Avengers...
Age of Ultron! Oh, I've missed that. Marvel's Daredevil for Netflix has found its Foggy Nelson in Eldon Henson.
CW's The Flash will premiere on Tuesday the 7th of October, with Arrow Season 3 returning the following day on Wednesday the 8th of October.
Okay, now get this one. Following several incidents of costume characters committing crimes, it's hard to say, in New York Times Square, calls are being made for licensing of all performances in the area in a move that is being seen as akin to the Superhero Registration Act. We're only one step away from Civil War, people.
Exciting. I was actually just saying when I read this, whether that's also going to apply to the cosplayers outside Man's Chinese Theater in California.
This is actually the president of the Times Square Association or something like that is calling for this, because there have been a spate of crimes, and it's not just the superhero ones, because apparently there's been people getting, like, there's costume characters getting shirty and attacking people when they don't pay for photographs, but there's been other people who have just been committing crimes in costume, like bag snatching or whatever, in the area. And it's not just the superheroes, like Spider-Man's one of the more famous ones there, but it's people dressed up as, like, Hello Kitty and
Can
SpongeBob.
Can you imagine Hello Kitty the bag snatcher?
Yeah. There's a great photo online of, like, Hello Kitty, like, up against the wall with two New York City cops. I love that.
What an image.
So that's this week's news. But of course, the other news is that if you're in the Melbourne area, go and check out Oz Comic Con, because Oz Comic Con is in its third year this year. It's come back to Melbourne for the third year. There's some great comics guests down there. There, of course, there's people like Tom Taylor, Nicola Scott. There's our good friend Tristan Jones. There's Paul Bedford. There's all those folks down there.
Cosplayers.
There's cosplayers galore. There's people like Richard Dean Anderson. There's both of the Ashmores down there. The Ashmore, you know. in stereo. I mean, if you're into film, TV, geekery, whatever, Oz Comic Con's got something for you.
And it's, so. I mean, Oz Comic Con is expanding. I mean, this year we've also got a Sydney one coming as well.
We've got Sydney and Brisbane.
It's getting bigger every year. So if you're in Melbourne, go see it, go experience it.
And look, you know, and the exhibition hall in Carlton Gardens there is such an inspired choice for having a.
It's a beautiful building.
Oh, it's a great building.
I took my music theory exam in that building.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we'll be down there, so go check that out. But for now, I think it's time for something I like to call the Kick-Ass Pick of the Week.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the Pick of the Week.
Originally conceived as a relaunch for DC's Scalp Hunter, Jason Aaron's Scalped is something else entirely. Dash Your Bad Horse returns to the fictional Prairie Rose Indian Reservation in modern-day South Dakota after a 15-year absence. Railroaded by the corrupt Tribal Council President Lincoln Redcrow, soon to open a multi-million-dollar casino, Bad Horse must ruthlessly enforce Red Crow's will as a tribal cop while confronting the demons of his past. Coupled with R.M. Guerra's visceral art, this is a bloody punch in the gut that takes no prisoners. This is Scalped.
Yeah, that's a traditional Australian folk song called Hell's Bells that was playing underneath that by a little-known band called Akadaka, or ACDC. Actually, that was a cover version. That was the Dandy Warhols. Cover right. version of that, which is really, really great. Really like that. Scalped is a book I read a few years ago. Nima, who we always mention on the show, lent me the trade a few years ago. Loved it. And for some reason, I've never returned to it. So this was a good chance for me to get back into it. This is... I wish I could remember who recommended us to do it for the show.
I know. I've been racking my brain for the last 24 hours trying to remember who recommended this. So, you know, email... If you did, remind us.
Feedback at behindthepanels.net, facebook.com/behindthepanels, or Twitter at behindthepanels.
Because we want to thank you.
Yeah, we want to thank you because this is a terrific book. This is Jason Aaron, R.M. Guerra. Jason Aaron, of course, is currently writing... Southern Bastards.
And
Thor. And Thor for Marvel. I was pointing at you because I completely forgot. I completely I had a complete brain fart in that second. He's doing amazing stuff.
Oh, and Original Sin. Original Sin.
Oh, and Original Sin, of course.
Jason Aaron is the man.
He's the man.
As we'll find out.
He's not the hick man, but he is the man.
He doesn't do lists.
You don't need a list to follow.
Yeah, you don't need a chart at the end of the book. But this book's really interesting. I mean, this is the one of the first major twists that we find out in this, we actually spoiled at the end of last week's show. It's a twist that comes at the end of the second or third issue. But it starts with this guy. His name is sort of a very classical noirish Western Dashiell. Combination. It's Dashiell
Bad Horse.
Thank you. Bad Horse. I forgot the name of the character 2 seconds into the show. Dashiell Bad Horse is the name of the character, and he is a badass character. He's bald, tattooed, got ear
piercings.
And his
first appearance in the book, you don't even think he's the good guy.
No. you find out as the thing goes, the kind of training he's had throughout his life. But he's someone who left this Native American reservation 15 years ago at the age of 13.
Badly, apparently.
Badly, yeah. Mm. And then comes back and soon makes a reputation for himself, and he is quickly hired as reservation police, tribal police, by the ostensibly the tribal president, who is...
He's also the sheriff, the casino owner, the...
the effectively mob boss.
Yeah, it's a very messy situation.
It's a very messy situation. Red Crow. So he's dealing with all this, and there's an old flame of his that's there who's now the town bicycle, and, you know, there is, you know, his mother is a protest, a protest activist from way back.
Who they have a hate-hate relationship
with. They have the most hateful relationship you could possibly imagine. All these literal and figurative demons coming at him from all over the place. The backdrop, of course, is that there's this $97 million reservation casino going up, and you know, of course, there's all sorts of politics and corruption.
And to give you an idea of this reservation, they were saying that this particular little town in the reservation has a population of 28, but it actually has a beer count of 60. What is
it? Like
4 million cans of beer or something like that per year.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Which is one of the first things that I think is really important to note about this book is that it is a book that's set on a modern day Native American reservation that is a noir western thriller, crime story, murder mystery, but at the same time it deals with all these things like race and politics and really topical issues about this hidden ghetto in the middle of America. Mm. And of course, sex.
And there are many of these ghettos across America, as we know.
Absolutely, and I think they'd actually refer to it as a third world country in the middle of America.
Yeah,
somewhere in the book. And I think that's a really important point to make. It's not exploitative. It's actually a really hard-hitting tale that just happens to have a really shit-hot narrative straight through the center of it. This is, I've been talking for a while. You guys, what did you think of this book?
Look, I love this book. This is my first read of this book. I was actually not even aware of this book.
Same here.
And when we said we were going to read the first trade of Scalped, I went, oh God, here we go. This is going to be homework. Mm. But no, this is a really good book. This is a really well-written book. It is a roller coaster of a first trade. I mean, it goes by in the blink of an eye. Mm. You know, I mean, I'm ready to go on and read rest of the trades. My only small niggle with it at all was, as much as I love the art in it, because the art is beautiful, is that I actually found that it took me a while to actually differentiate certain characters because of the highly stylized art. Mm. So I had trouble, like, as an example, for instance, I thought that the head bad guy and the head fed actually looked really similar to each other. And so when we would be cutting to flashbacks, it's like, hold on, who are we following?
Well, so you just mentioned the head fed. We should probably get into the first major spoiler of the book,
sure,
which comes in at the end of the first arc, which is that not only has he returned to the reservation and he's become the tribal cop, he's actually FBI agent undercover.
Undercover, yeah. And this is all to bring down this head mob boss, basically.
But as we go on, we find out that he's not that well liked within the FBI either.
No. And there are ulterior motives as to why the FBI want to bring down this mob boss.
While we're talking about the art,
I've read ahead and there's more to come.
Oh, there's certainly more to come, yeah. We talk about the first arc in this is actually the first three issues. It's Indian Country, which is the subtitle of the first trade. Mm. And then there's two more issues, which is actually the start of another arc in there, which there's another major twist.
Which ends on a cliffhanger.
Which ends on a cliffhanger, and then it goes on. You've read on to 6 and 7, I think, and that's that carries on in there. It's 60 issues all up, so it's a nice self-contained Vertigo series.
It's 10 trades.
It's 10 trades, 5, 6 issues a piece. So it is a nice self-contained book, much like Why the Last Man when we did that. But while we're on the subject of the art, I want to talk about what Brian K. Vaughan said in the introduction to the first trade about the art, because I love the way he describes this. He said, you'll probably notice the sex, thanks largely to R.M. Guerra, whose visceral artwork will drive to your house, throw you in the back of a pickup, and haul your ass straight onto the reservation. This book has got some of the best cliffhangers on the stands, and Guerra nails every one of them. Just awesome. And I love that. I mean,
agreed completely.
It is a book that really does. Every issue that you read, every page that you read, it's kind of like you feel as though you're right in there, you're covered in dust by the end of
it. That small niggle about the characters, that goes away about halfway through the book. It's just when you first get into it, because you're trying to get used to it.
Compare this to any other ongoing, because you're in for the long haul with this, you're in for the 60 issues. If you commit to this, you're going to want to read
on
the long. It's kind of like any TV show. The first couple of episodes, you're establishing characters, you're establishing who's who. And this has actually been picked up for a TV show. I can't remember which network is doing it. It's WGN or something like that.
I wish it was HBO or
WB Network.
The
CW Network.
It's on the Learning Channel. It's going to be programmed right after Honey Boo Boo. This does feel like a TV show in a lot of ways because the way it's paced, every episode ends on a cliffhanger. It's got, you know, multiple characters that, like the best Vertigo series, you can go off and explore a character for a little while and then come back and explore the others. And I think that's you're looking up the thing that I was trying to look up, which is Scalp TV. I've got two keyboards in front of me and I pressed the wrong one. WGN America.
WGN.
Yeah. So, and that was last we heard about that was back in April. And I love the way they've described it on there, crime noir drama.
Oh, it kind of is, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's the thing. But it's... who are the people behind this? It says that it's Banshee's Doug Jung.
Well, Banshee's got enough nudity in it.
will pen the script and executive produce the Warner Horizon television drama. There you go. Yeah, that's right. That was the other interesting fact about this. It was loosely based on Leonard Peltier, who was arrested for gunning down two FBI agents on a reservation in 1975. There's a little bit of that inspiration.
Yeah, there's two FBI agents who were gunned down.
So. Exactly. So this is, I think one of the things that makes this work is that it is grounded in this element of realism, but it goes to some dark places. And I'm thinking one of the really dark places in a flashback, and this is this hate-hate relationship he has with his mother, was when he has this flashback and his
mother's like showing him a dead body and making him stare at it.
Don't look away.
Just don't look away. I want you to think of this every time you pick up a gun.
Yeah.
And then it cuts back to him just mowing down a bunch of people. And then you find out what he's gone through in the 15 years he spent off reservation. And there's a reason this guy's a hard ass. But there's a reason he probably left the reservation a hard ass and came back even harder.
I love the fact that when he's actually in FBI training, they're actually saying he's not suitable as a field officer. And they're going, no, I want him.
Yeah.
And it's like, but, you know, they don't want him even on the FBI.
Yeah.
They want to go bury him on a desk somewhere.
They just said, I don't care if he's in the top 5% of his class. He is in the top 5% of his class. You know, I mean, this is one of those books that, it's a few years old now. It came out back in 2007. It launched and it ran through to 2012. And, you know, this is a great thing about having them in trade. We can always go back and revisit them. Mm-hmm. And it's a story, even though I think, you know, certainly other social issues have sort of come along and sort of trumped this in terms of what comics are about in the last couple of years. This is still a really important sort of slice of Americana that kind of like Preacher, kind of like, you know, why
but without any of that supernatural element to it.
Yeah.
This is just straight visceral life, you know?
And but kind of like Preacher, there's this real slice of Americana in there that it is and Brian K. Vaughan says this in the introduction. You know, it seemed as though Vertigo and all the best writers were from Britain because, you know, Alan Moore and Grant Morrison and all these people were like dominating Vertigo for so many years. Mm-hmm. And then someone
Warren Ellis,
yeah. And then someone like Jason Aaron comes in and it's like only an American could write this because it is purely an American writing about America.
Yeah.
And it is so American. And that's one of the great things about it. It's rare for an American book to be so... You can't use the word joyously American because it's not, but it's just so uniquely American and so self-critical at the same time. Usually it's somebody else coming in and pointing
the finger.
Normally it's a Garth Ennis coming in and pointing the finger about, you know, either satirically or you know, Alan Moore ripping apart the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is life, you know, in America.
Yeah.
You know?
This, as I say, this is no rah-rah, we're Americans, look at us, you know, Team America style.
No,
this is rough and gritty. Dave, we haven't heard much from you. Tell us about it.
I knew about Saga, Not Saga. Jeez,
I almost swore
as well. No, I knew about Scalped, but I always wanted to read it because it's one of the few Vertigo titles that I haven't picked up. Like, I've done pretty much everything except for Fables and this. So
I haven't done Fables yet. I got to do.
Yeah, Fables is the last Vertigo title, I think.
Well, Fables
yeah.
is actually finishing up this year or early next year, I think. So you'll have an endpoint to it. So.
Yeah, but basically, I thought this was magnificent. Just absolutely one of the best comics I've picked up in ages. And I'm definitely going to go through the whole rest of the series maybe within the week.
Well, what we should do
all I really want to comment on is just that I thought the artwork was amazing. Like, phenomenal. And it reminds me of Eduardo Risso's work for 100 Bullets, which
I think
100 Bullets is the finest drawn comic book, like, maybe of the 20s, 21st
century. And you'll eat your shoe if you can find another one.
Well, there's not. Yeah, well,
you have to go through the wardrobe for this one.
But no, but look, like, I think it's the finest for a specific reason though, just because it's personally the style that I like the most.
Yeah. Yes.
So like, it's got nothing to do with like objective. Like, this is the best technique. It's just something about that style rings really true to me.
Like all good work or good artwork should. It should,
exactly,
it should touch you emotionally.
Yeah. And the book itself, everything Richard said prior and everything you said, Dave, I agree with 100%. I don't know. I don't have anything else but hyperbole.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is a great film. I think we can go out
so
and
good.
I think we can go
Sorry.
Out and I'll have to beep that out.
Sorry.
I will have to go out on a limb and I think we should call this one, shall we?
Let's do it.
This is Comics 101.
And absolutely.
And if for no other reason, the trade cover art is Jock, and it's the most beautiful cover art.
Brilliant.
You could see it. Just buy this volume alone so you've got this beautiful Jock. If you can get that as a poster, it's just an amazing...
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful Native American Indian with the headdress and the whole... It's just
But
fantastic.
It's got this sort of noirish silhouette in the front of it.
It's just
this real Pulp Fiction kind of feel to it. And that's what it feels like. It's got that kind of pulpy feel, and you feel like this could be...
This is also a great book, by the way, though, for people who are not really into comics, because this is a great just read.
Which is really like what a lot of Vertigo titles are doing. This is very much mature readers comic, which we should point that out. Language, sex, drugs.
But as you said before, it never feels exploitative.
No.
Ever.
It's very violent, too.
And as heightened as the dialogue is, it never rings like false.
No.
You know,
it actually, even though the sex is frequent and explicit compared to other books, it doesn't, it's not as explicit as, say, you know, Sex.
Or Saga.
Or Saga.
But this is why that artwork, the artwork is so impressive. Because it the artwork is stylized.
Exactly.
But yet it rings so true.
And it's like, almost, you feel as though you're seeing more than you actually are.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the best kind of artwork there is, where your mind is, because of the artwork, is suggested and just enough to you that you're going off and making the leap yourself, and which is what the best comic should do.
And we were talking about Saga before, how like the marriage of like an exceptional writer with an exceptional artist just creates this, you know, thing. And this is that thing. You
it
know?
Does
like
feel as though, these two
that combination
minds have come together.
It's just, you know. And that's so, like, as Dave said, it reads like that. Like, you know, it reads goes, like.
Put it this way, I was late.
And that's the mark of just absolute.
I was late in this week to getting to my books this week because of a long week at work. And I thought, oh my God, I got to catch up and read this. I read this really fast. Mm. You know, this, because you just get absorbed in it and you just go and you just go, it's finished.
Yeah. You don't have that feeling of like you turn the page, there's a brick of text. You know, no. Like, you don't have that. And even though this does have a lot of dialogue, it's never that overwhelming, like, oh.
No,
it
reads really fast. Yeah.
Actually, one of the other sort of literary references that's throughout this, apart from the obvious one of Dashiell Hammett, is there's apparently the Carol, the character Carol, is Carol Elroy, which is a reference to James Elroy, who did L.A. Confidential. And I think that kind of noir, that sort of modern noir, I think that's a really good comparison to this as well, because they read, they're really fast reading books that kind of everyone's corrupt, everyone's got a story, everyone's got something going on and a different motivation, and that's what this feels like. It's that kind of sprawling saga, which, you know, you end up being written over three or four books. That's what this feels like. So if you like that kind of thing, and as you say, definitely for people, non-comics fans who like that kind of genre, and I really like it. This I think
that scene quickly that you talked about of the flashback of him being forced to look at the shot, like, murdered body.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of that in the book too, like, which is absolutely like profound and affecting, like, when you read it. And that's
you hit the nail on the head there. How many comics have you read where they actually make you feel an emotion, like actually feel a real proper emotion coming out of this? And it is.
And that moment has carried with me since I've read it.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's kind of crazy. When you think about it.
And it's only
like
a handful
like
of
this
panels.
Like this comic, I've never used this to talk about a comic, but it's like unforgettable.
It really is.
Yeah.
And apparently, like, I've got to get to the ending because there's a review from Newsarama a couple of years ago when it finished saying it's the an awe-inspiring conclusion.
Mm. Oh, wow.
So we've got to get to the end.
I'll let you know next week.
Yeah, let's
or the week after, because we're not going to be here.
Yeah, let's finish reading this and agree that at some stage later this year we'll come back and do the saga, the scalp saga.
Next week, guys, next week.
Not next week.
No, because, don't go to Melbourne.
Well, we should say, next week we're in Melbourne, obviously. We're going to be doing Oz Comic Con, and there might be a few interviews and things that come out of that as one-offs, as one-shots. Of course, they're not the numbered ones. Next time we convene, before we wrap this up, we've said this is Comics 101. We've all agreed.
Highly recommend.
We can highly recommend this book. So for those of you who say this is the most expensive show that you listen to, giving you another $12.99 on Comixology to go and spend, or however much it costs on
and trade and
paperback.
The fact that you're going to go and buy all the rest of the trades, so you're up for the next 10 trades.
I think there's actually, Vertigo is releasing, and correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, Vertigo's been doing this a lot lately, releasing them as slightly larger hardcovers with about 10 or 11 issues per thing, and that's what they did with Y, that's what they did with Fables at the moment, and they're doing it with this, so that's maybe the more economical.
And Vertigo, come on, get us a Transmetropolitan. An omnibus or a hardcover. Come on, please.
We need to do that at some point, because I
haven't
read
it. We will definitely do Transmet at some stage, because
that's Dave's all-time favorite comic, by the way.
Really?
Really?
Well, there you go. Well, then well, at some stage this year, we're also going to do...
Me, not...
Yeah,
not
yeah well, I haven't read it yet.
You're already talking about yourself in the third person.
Yeah, I know. I feel like, what the hell did I do there?
Well, last year we did...
Dave doesn't do that, Richard.
Well, Richard doesn't... One thing Richard instigated last year was we took a week where we all just did one... We had like a veto card. It was like, I'm doing one of my favorite books this week. I don't care what the other two of you agree on. And we did that. We ended up doing Quiver, and we did
Power Girl
and
Barry Wayne.
And I think we should do that this year. So maybe we'll do Transmet for you this year. And we've got to decide on ours at some stage. So next week there won't be a show.
Mine's a Halloween book. It's going to be Nancy.
Oh, yeah. Well, but that's Halloween. Next
and
week,
I'm Spider Island, guys.
If that's how you're going to use your choice this year, that's your prerogative.
Hey, hell. I can actually choose Spider Island. I can.
You can.
I have a trump card.
You have a trump card, and we've got nothing we can do
about
it. You're
going to blackmail us with this.
Yeah. But then, well, I have... Ah, come on.
You know, we're going to wrap this up because we've got a long day ahead of us. But next week we won't be here. Of course, we're going to be away doing comic-y things in another city. So you might see us live and in the flesh, which is the same as listening to the show, really. You get to hear our wonderful voices,
really?
But you get to touch us at the same time.
Nobody touches me.
And maybe, just maybe, we get to touch you as well. But then, the following week
after that.
That
just sounds so creepy.
So we're talking the second Monday in July. You will get the magnificent 100th episode spectacular of Behind. 100 episodes we're up to, people. It's taken us about twice as long as it should have, but we got up to 100 episodes. But
next week will be back to issue one, right?
Back to issue one. We'll have Panels Point, which will be a seven episode stand, and then we'll have panels year one, and then new 52. Then we said this before the show. We're gonna get 52 new hosts in,
and then it'll be panels now,
yep. And then the all new panels now. Yeah. So that's our plan. We've planned this out to 2025.
Yeah, we got a big board.
That's what we're gonna do. So until then, you can find me on the Twitters at DVDBits. You can find me online at therealbits.com. That's the RELBits.com, or of course behindthepanels.net. David.
You can find me on Twitter at David McVeigh. You can find me on Facebook, Facebook.com/David McVeigh, or Geek Actually has its own Facebook page. And you can also find me at geekactually.com.
You can find me on Twitter at Dave Longo.
Excellent.
and Facebook as well, but whatever.
If you want to contact...
I used to have a website. It's still there, but...
it's damngoodcup.com if you want to look at the archives.
That's right, the archives.
The,
read the Winter Soldier review. It's coming out on Blu-ray soon.
If you want to contact this show, and God knows why you would after this shocking performance, yeah. You can find us at the regular places, feedback@behindthepanels.net, facebook.com/behindthepanels, or on Twitter @behindthepanels. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
David Longo.
And this is Behind the Panels. Scarlett Johansson wraps her legs around an electric hog. Also, it's the...
What the heck is that? Nah, keep it going, man. This is audio.
Start again.